We're in an age of business transformation. Leaders across all industries are facing the need to drive continual, sustainable, large-scale change.
I couldn't understand, as a business person, how it was that we saw other businesses doing relatively okay, but yet our work was good, but we were still declining. And so for me, I was like, there has to be another way.
That's Dory McWhorter, CEO of the YWCA Metropolitan Chicago. She sparked a journey to transform the YWCA's 140-year-old social service agency to a 21st century social enterprise. An accountant by training, Dory was first introduced to the YWCA as a member of its board of directors. With her stellar track record of leading change across organizations in both corporate and social sectors, Dory became the chapter CEO in 2013.
It wasn't going to be that I came from someplace on high to dictate what they did. They hold the knowledge, they hold the expertise. My role is to simply create the platform where they can express their value to the world as well.
I'm Merrill McDonald, and my passion is helping people and organizations navigate the human struggle of change. I believe that when we relinquish control, we open up amazing new possibilities. This podcast, Let Go and Lead, is about what happens when we loosen the reins. In it, I speak with business leaders, academics, and creative thinkers to hear about their career and life journeys and gather what they've learned about change, transformation, and creativity along the way. On this episode, I'm thrilled to welcome Dory McWhorter. Hey, Dory, thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here.
I'm so excited to talk to you because now you've been with the Y for 5 years, almost 6 years, I guess.
Yes.
And so much has happened. It's been unbelievable watching it. And I'd just love to hear, when you first joined the Y, what were things like then?
Well, interesting enough, so I joined the Y in March of 2013, and at that time, it was really in a declining state. And so we really had to come in and think about what can we do to make a difference quickly, or we were probably going to be out of cash within like 2 to 3 years, which is not a good position to be in.
And I saw a wonderful quote that you said, nonprofit is a tax status, not a business model. I love that. Talk more about that.
Well, because it was interesting, as we hear that we're a nonprofit, it almost felt so limiting to me in terms of what we could do and how we could think about the organization. And I was like, and I would hear things, I'd say, well, we should try this. And I'm like, well, we can't because we're a nonprofit. I'm like, that's a tax status, people. That's not how you run a business, right? And so I wanted us to be more thoughtful around what we could do to really create greater impact, but also create the right business model to give us the resources we need to do the work. And so I finally said, look, nonprofit, it's a tax status, not a business model. We need to create the business model.
So you came in, and of course, as you said, you had great familiarity with the business, or probably maybe not great, but good.
I knew a little.
It surprised you in some ways, right? So tell me, first of all, what did surprise you once you got inside?
What surprised me, quite honestly, is how much opportunity there was. And so because when you're looking at just the numbers, you're like, well, we're declining. And so it never gives you a perspective that there's actually assets and tools within the business that just haven't been leveraged. So when I got there, I was like, oh, my goodness, there's like a buffet here. We just got to get started. And so that was probably the most surprising thing, because I think when people think you're in a turnaround situation that there's not a lot that you can do with what you have. And it was just the opposite. We had a lot to work with. We just had to get started.
And I'm imagining, too, you must have seen something that got you to go in the first place that you thought, okay, I can work with this.
Absolutely.
Right? What was that?
So one of the things that we did have such strong programming. For example, we operate the rape crisis lines in the city of Chicago. And so we had been providing these services for literally decades. And like, as a 140-year-old organization, everything you do, you probably have done for decades, right? And so our services were so solid. We literally had some of the best clinical counselors on staff. And then we also were running a great economic empowerment program. And we did great work for child care providers in the early childhood space. So we were doing all this good work. And so I just like, oh, these pieces are here. We just got to put them together differently. And that's what we started doing.
That's great. And you, of course, have a strong mission, right?
Like, absolutely.
Tell us about the mission.
Sure. Yeah. Our mission is eliminating racism, empowering women by promoting peace, justice, dignity, and freedom for all. I call it the Superman mission. I'm like, that's essentially we're saving the world.
Or Superwoman.
Superwoman, absolutely. Absolutely. Except it literally reminds me of the old Superman TV shows when he's standing there on the flags waving behind him. I'm like, that's our mission.
That's terrific.
Yeah.
So you show up. And you have a lot of people who've probably been there for a long time. They're probably thinking, oh, here we go again, right?
Absolutely.
Tell me about that. What was that like?
Well, because I think you're right. When I got there, I think that we had one person had said in her tenure that I would have been her third or fourth CEO. And it's interesting because while I was on the board for 8 years, we technically only had two CEOs during that time. And then plus an interim that was there before I got there. So that in itself is three in that 8 year period, right? And so, and then with the person that had been there 10 years, I would be her fourth CEO. So that's a lot of transition, right? And so I get there, and people, it's interesting because I was on the board with the sort of corporate staff, meaning the marketing development people and the finance people, I was already familiar with all those type of people because we have so much interaction with them in the boardroom. But it was the line staff. It's like, she doesn't know anything about counseling. She doesn't know anything about economic development and community. She doesn't know anything about childcare. So what is she going to do, right? And so I think that there was a little resistance relative to what was I going to actually bring to the table. And so I think I quickly positioned myself as, you all are the experts. I'm just here to sort of wrap you around with the type of support that I believe your businesses need to be successful.
Mm-hmm. So, and how did you get started?
I really had to focus on stabilizing the organization. Mm-hmm. And so we really looked at our marketing development department, right? So the fundraisers and what we're doing from that perspective, because that was going to be the area to make the quickest impact. And quite honestly, because nothing was really broken as it relates to the work, it was really about, what are we doing with what we have? How do we tell different stories? How do we connect with different people? So a lot of the effort was initially led out of the marketing development group, which we changed the name to strategic engagement. We're like, what you're doing is engaging with people to get the resources we need. And so we wanted to be specific around that. And we just connected differently. I was just telling someone, one person in our group was our major gifts officer, so one of the fundraisers, and I literally walked up by his desk and salute him and call him Major Gifts, you know. And then I stopped doing that and decided to change his title. So he's now our director inspired giving, because we had these siloed approaches where the person that wrote grant and the person that would do events and marketing events that would help us, or fundraising events, I should say, as well as our former major gift officer, formerly titled major gift officer, they had all these individual goals. They weren't really working together in a way that would be that I thought could really be as mostly more beneficial to the organization. So we got rid of that. We said, look, we know that people want to support our work if they know what we did, but all of you should engage with them in different ways. And so that was one thing that allowed us to ask for resources differently and talk about our service differently, engage with our services. And then those people never visited our program. So how could you sell something you didn't even know about? And so we got more of those people out into the field and understanding our work and looking at it from that perspective. And we did see things. We wrote for different grants because now all of a sudden they understand that there's a different component of the program that we could highlight for this type of funder. So we really got deeper into who we are, what we do, what were the fundamentals of the work itself, so that we could talk about and market it and expose it differently to different funders.
It seems like, too, that you brought a whole different way of allowing employees to look at the why. Like, even in revamping a lot of your materials, your offices are way brighter than they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about some of the things you were thinking about
there.
You
know, what I did when I first got there, because, of course, we were on the decline, you could see that in our people, right? They were like, we love this work, but will we still be here? And I had to take that off the table. In fact, one of the earlier things we did was work with Aaron Hurst at imperative. Yeah. And he wrote the book, The Purpose Economy. And I heard him speak and was so aligned to everything he was saying around why people are attracted to the work that they're attracted to and what that looks like and how we engage with them. And so I said, if we're going to fulfill this mission of empowering women, we need to empower the ones inside first, because we can't empower the women out there if the ones in here don't feel fully empowered. And so we really had to take the time to understand what they needed from the organization and what that looked like as well, to really be able to start thinking about how we could and truly start to, the transformation process.
What were some of the things you heard from the women inside? What were they looking for?
It's interesting because my approach, when you were talking about having them look at the organization differently, I started talking about value creation and how I see the work that we do part of the greater value we're bringing to the marketplace. They're like, what are you talking about? Those aren't terms we talk about here. And it sounded very corporate. So that was an interesting experience and exchange with our people, because they were like, we didn't come here to work for, so I was being called corporate behind my back, but I could hear them. So, because they were speaking to more to the approaches that we were taking, were not feeling as charitable as they were used to experiencing, I guess.
So that's interesting. So you were using what they called corporate speak,
mm-hmm.
and of course the language of business. They were using more the language of nonprofits or service organizations. And so what did you do? Did you marry the two? Did you go one way or the other?
Yeah, we married the two.
Yeah.
We had to, because, for example, I had created this worksheet that I called Value Chain Worksheet. Simply to show them how their programs deliver value to people. And they're like, what are you talking about? And so we actually changed it to stakeholder value, because the point of the worksheet in the first place was that your service has greater benefit in the world. Mm-hmm. But you see your service as only benefiting the direct person you're providing service to. And the worksheet was designed to say you're providing a person a service, and that person, because they receive that service, is better off. Who cares that person receives that service? Because then that would be who we would actually go talk to about supporting that service, right? And so we're saying, by that person receiving that service, they've been able to unearth their value, and others do care about that. So, for example, we had a service that we provided that helped child care providers access subsidies for feeding kids healthy and nutritious meals, because when kids eat better, they learn better. And they have and by the way, we were also teaching them that eating better is important for their overall health. And to do that at an early age has lifelong impacts. And so we were doing that, but the only person that was supporting us was really the federal government in the USDA. It was a USDA program. And the program was called the Child and Adult Care Food Program. We changed the name to TUMMY, Nutrition Education Services, because General Mills cares that kids eat Cheerios, right? And so we were able to get different funding from ConAgra, General Mills, people that cared about kids and families eating healthier. And so that's how we were able to demonstrate to them that there is value in what they do, but it was up to us to show them how to talk about their value differently.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of leaders really struggle with how to connect employees and what they do every day back to the strategy of the organization. It sounds like that's a lot of what you were working on.
And we had to.
Yeah.
We had to, because so one of the things we did with this Child and Adult Care Food Program, when we changed the name to TUMMY, we gave it a new logo. They were like, this is so cute. They actually loved it, because they went from the Child and Adult Care Food Program to TUMMY. You know, so it's both marketing internally and externally. Yeah. And they loved it. And it has the cutest little logo. It's like carrots and orange. It's so cute. But it was doing those type of things so that they can see, to your point, that what they did mattered to the vitality of the organization. And it wasn't going to be that I came from someplace on high to dictate what they did. They hold the knowledge. They hold the expertise. My role is to simply create the platform where they can express their value to the world as well.
Can you tell us about the transformation you're leading at the Y?
So from a transformation perspective, what I said was, going back to sort of my mantra that nonprofit is tax status, not a business model, I really want to say what's possible with this organization. And in doing that, really wanted to define what we could be versus sort of fix what was broken. Mm-hmm. And so I said, well, you know, we're in an age where businesses are looking for ways to do more good. So we're in trouble, quite honestly, if they figure out how to do good and make money. They're already, presumably, if they're in business, they're already making money. So what do we need to do to truly be able to compete with businesses that make money but are now also focusing on doing more good? And so that's where we came up with the concept that we needed to transform this 140-year-old social service agency to really a 21st century social enterprise, because I do believe that social enterprise will continue to be the way business is done and will continue to grow. So the question is, how do we fit into that? And so our transformation had to really take into consideration that the marketplace has changed, that you have, I always say that if any large-scale business decides to take on our mission, they would crush us, right? So we serve 200,000 women and families across the Chicagoland area. McDonald's alone, what, employs 2 million people around the world. And they hire probably more women and people of color than any other entity that I'm very closely familiar with, at least. And I'm like, wow, if they put the right supports in place, we would be done, right? And so I look at how other businesses are doing their business, and at the same time, how they're looking at ways that they're creating greater impact through their business. And I wanted us to define what that model would be for us, since we are already doing good. But how do we then maintain that and sustain what we need to do and continue to grow what we think we need to do? How do we need to operate as a business to do that? So that's how we sort of got on this transformation journey from 140-year-old social service agency to now being a 21st century social enterprise, recognizing that we do need to look at ourselves as doing the business of human services.
I'm interested in hearing your definition of social enterprise, because so many people talk about the term and often refer to it in different ways. Like, what do you think of when you...
When I think of social enterprise, how I define it for myself, quite honestly, and for the organization, is where we're creating value for every stakeholder in the business. And for us, that's absolutely community, that's absolutely employees, that's absolutely customers, that's absolutely suppliers, but really taking a value mindset across all of those stakeholders. Because if you think about business sort of stops traditionally at its customers, right? But we recognize that another stakeholder in business is the community. And what does that mean? And so for us, it's looking at value creation across all of those different stakeholder groups. And so from a social enterprise perspective, as we look at our organization, we got the community side, but how else are we creating value in this capitalistic society, right? And so we want to be able to participate in different ways. So when we look at other businesses, it's how can we partner with them? What does that look like for us? And so as I talk about social enterprise, it's really with that value creation mindset.
What's your thought on whether any one stakeholder group takes priority over the other? How do you manage that?
I feel like you always have to make a decision, mm-hmm. and that decision is going to be driven by whoever you are as a leader and what you believe that strategy is. I think I read an HBR article years ago when I was at the firm that talked about there's really sort of three stakeholder orientations to strategy, one being shareholders, which we think about businesses most of the time, that being the priority, one being customers, one being employees. And I happen to be of the mindset that employees are the way we reach those other stakeholder groups. And so for us, from a strategy perspective, I've never been a person that sort of, when they say, because I think to your point, when you talk about social enterprise, most people think you're choosing people over profit or putting people before profit or sort of creating a priority between the two. And I just simply always say that you can't have one without the other ever. So I'm not going to work so hard to disintegrate those. I'm going to really focus on how we always achieve both.
Yeah.
It's just that we have a model that recognizes our impact goes further than just customers or just profit or whatever we bring to the table as well.
I know you've said that to lead others is to know thyself, and that, I'm interested in talking about that because self-awareness is something that we focus on a lot with leaders.
I often say that, you know, we talk about the marketplace as B2C or B2B, but I'm like, it's always B2P, right? There's a person driving all of this, and it's up to us to, I think the as we take the time to understand ourselves and be better people, we will get better decisions. We will get better processes. We will get better structures because we ultimately own all of that.
Let's go back to the transformation at the Y. What factors have made the Y's transformation successful?
Well, I think the key factor for the transformation for us really has been about our people, because they've been the one holding this transformation. As we even talk about, as I mentioned, from a B2B or B2C perspective before, it's the people that are driving the change. So the YWCA, whatever we look like, whoever we become, is really going to be determined by the people within it and what they do, how they respond to the changes that we're trying to make, the ideas that we're giving them. And they actually get to decide if we change or not, right? I give an idea. They're like, yeah, no, we're not going to do that, or we are. So ultimately, the change we make or the transformation we make is really on their shoulders. And so to have them engaged and excited about what's possible, and that's been our approach. It's less been less about this organization is is broken, we need to fix it. It's been about, do you all realize that this is actually a possibility that we can actually fulfill our mission and you hold the tools to do that, but we're also going to give you some more tools to help you do that? I think that has excited people and allowed them to be courageous and try different things and also generate ideas themselves. So that's been so exciting for me. The transformation has absolutely been about how the people have engaged with it and what they believe is possible, which is why one of the key things we had to do then, and I mentioned what we did with Aaron Hurst and the Purpose Economy and the Imperative Group, we wanted people to tap into their purpose and potential. So we changed our, first we got a different style of HR leader so that we could focus on helping people. She actually had a consulting background, so we can focus on helping people, what we say, unleash their purpose and potential. And in doing that, we unleash the purpose and potential for the organization as well. And that's been what we've been seeing. And everything that we've done, they've done. I've just said, you know, I think this is possible. And they're like, okay, well, how are we going to get there? So giving them tools like, you know, understanding their value and talking about them as adding value, and they never thought about it like that, is what's been allowing us to really unleash that as well.
What do you think is the most common misperception about leadership?
I think that people assume that leaders have all the answers. You know, because you're a leader, you know where you're leading us to.
Yeah.
And I think that people just believe that leaders know more than they do. That's why I don't like for people to call me boss. Because it feels like then you are telling me that you're sort of abdicating your responsibility to own anything that you do, you know, and say, well, you're the boss. Tell me what to do. I'm like, no, I'm just going to be here to be guide rails, but I need you to help us figure out together what we're going to do to solve this problem. And so I think that there's just a misconception when you say that person's a leader or that person's in charge, that they actually know what they're doing.
And when I was doing some research on you, I saw somewhere about you having people talk about someone supports me versus I report to them.
Yeah, we changed part of our HR process. We changed all of our job descriptions. So it's not who you report to, it's who you're supported by. Because the role of leaders is to support you and actually help you achieve the goals, not to just, again, do what you tell them to do, or, you know, or do what Or a leader isn't someone that should just tell you what to do, right? And someone
right.
that should be supporting you in achieving your purpose and potential and what that could be. And so we actually changed our HR title as well to Chief Possibility Officer, because that's the whole point. If we fully support the possibilities with our employees, that's what's going to grow this organization.
And as people have in their job description who supports them, How does that affect accountability? Like a typical corporate person would say, oh, whoa, you know, where's the accountability?
You know, it's funny. Talk We're about, working that back yeah. in. How because I was like, just do what you... The leaders from my leadership team, I was just like, your role is to have the dialogues with people that we need, and we had to, you know, do that throughout the organization. So now we're calling it, we don't call them KPIs, we're calling them empowerment indicators, because if our goal is to empower from the inside out, then to hold you accountable to that, you have to understand that what are the indicators that you're actually being empowered enough to get the work done? What does that look like? Mm-hmm. And so that's how we're now backing into that accountability thing, because my team was concerned that while we wanted to support people, that it wasn't support at all costs, right? It really was, how do we reconcile what the organization needs and what the individual needs to be successful, and what does that look like together? And so I was like, I get that, but I didn't want KPIs. I wanted empowerment indicators, because if we're doing the right thing, the employee should be empowered and the organization should be moving in the right direction. So let's figure out what that goal needs to be.
Yeah. I'd love to stick with this for a minute, because sure. a lot of our listeners struggle with this a lot.
Yeah.
So the idea that we want servant leaders, right? People who are really supportive of their people. But at the same point, we need people to get the job done, right? So
right.
your empowerment indicator, what would be an example of an empowerment indicator?
So that what we started doing, where we backed all the way up to say, what's the objective, right? This is the mission of the organization. What are we trying to accomplish? What does that look like? And what we layered in what your personal objectives were as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, because we really want to empower our people. And so they would create a goal that said, I actually don't know that they look any different than any other goals, quite honestly, but the difference is how they get there and how they engage with people around them to get there. So we actually created this whole empowerment framework as well, that we call real time. So it's understanding, getting, accessing the right resources. We really were doing it to help people understand that they have the authority to make decisions real time, and they don't need to always bubble that up.
Mm-hmm.
And so their objective or a goal would be to, you know, if they wanted to decrease the turnaround time to get someone approved for a childcare subsidy, what does that look like? So that's it's how they got to that point, not necessarily the indicator itself would change. It's how they engage with people to make sure that they actually achieve that is what we're looking at and caring more about and supporting them through that process.
So if I have an empowerment goal, it might be related to what? Something I do, right?
Right. And so the question would be, how do you get there? How do you work with your other employees? How are you talking to the person that supports you to help you get that? Because what ends up happening is that people don't achieve their goals, and then they had all the support around them, but they don't access it. So it's no longer say, well, I wasn't able to do this. It's like, well, did you talk to this person? Did you talk to that team member? Did you pull in this resource? So our goal is to get people to recognize that we're all, I keep saying it's an open book test, that
yeah.
we're all here to make sure you're successful. But if you indicate that that's your goal, the process it used to get there is what we're caring about.
Yeah. And when you hear the phrase, let go and lead, what does that mean to you?
I think it goes back to a piece of what I said before, is that, at least in my mind, that we don't know all the answers. And so some of it we do just have to lead and do the best we can with what we know, but also allow people to participate in that process with us. And so, you know, I say that, yes, we have to do a strategic plan and all these things that we need to do from a business perspective. But I often say that, you know, the plan is just sort of a guess and an intention. How it actually works out, we don't actually know that. But so when I think of let go and lead, it's just like, you know, I'm just not going to be so prescriptive in terms of how this needs to happen. I'm going to, if I have a philosophy that everyone has value and that we have these people that are surrounding us, we're hopefully helping them fulfill their potential, then we're just going to sort of create this as we go. And I'm just going to do the best that I can with what I know, but recognizing that we're building up the people around us to support us on that as well. So we just have to stay open to what those possibilities are.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of General Rommel, who once said, even the greatest of strategies doesn't survive contact in the field.
Very true.
It's like you get out there and it's like, oh my gosh, we need to duck.
Exactly. But I want people to know that we should duck, right?
You
know?
Right.
But the plan says stand. No, you need to duck, right? That's what I need people to be able to operate in those environments. And you don't do that if you are prescribing how people should act and behave and what they should be thinking about, if you're letting them truly live into their potential and really be who they are. I always say, people say, you know, we want people to bring their whole selves to work. I'm like, yeah, work isn't ready for all that wholeness. You know? They're not ready for all that whole self as much as they think they are. But what I do want, I want people to bring all that full perspective to work, because I do think that, that's what makes us better.
We've been talking with Dory McWhorter, the CEO of the YWCA of Metropolitan Chicago. Dory, this has been absolutely fascinating. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Dory's transformation journey brought to light so many practices and learnings for us to reflect on. Here are three that really stood out to me. First, she recognized her team as experts. Dory's role was to channel their expertise, energy, and ideas in the best possible way as they co-created the YWCA's transformation together. Second, titles are powerful. Director of Inspired Giving, Chief Possibilities Officer, Dory saw potential in using language to inspire her team to see the impact their roles make in entirely new ways. Lastly, when embarking on a change journey, Dory set out to define the possibilities versus simply fixing what was broken. She imagined what could be and set out to accomplish that vision. Special thanks again to my Chicago friend Dory McWhorter for being on Let Go and Lead. As you digest today's episode, check out the corresponding guide at letgoandlead.com to spark ideas on how to apply the concepts Dory shared to your own world. And if you've been enjoying the podcast, please subscribe so you don't miss a future episode. Thanks for joining us.